This is Judy Berry from Earth First, and when I'm in Portland, I listen to Non-Commercial Community Radio, KBOO, Portland. No compromise in defense of the truth.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with the requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available on our website at kboo.fm. Due to the temporary closures of in-station activity at KBOO, meetings will be conducted online via public video conferencing unless otherwise noted. A public link and phone number to attend the meetings are available on our website. The Program Advisory Committee meets on the second Tuesday of the month at 6 p.m. Please visit our website at kboo.fm to verify if a meeting is being held.
Hello, you're listening to KBOO, KBOO 90.7 FM Portland, keeping Portland safe and in touch. Community radio has never been more important than right now when we don't have a lot of contact in person, and KBOO needs your support. You can donate via the KBOO website at kboo.fm/give. There's also a donate button in the mobile app. But the best way to support KBOO is by becoming a member at kboo.fm/give. KBOO is a nonprofit, listener-supported community resource for people like you. This is Wider Window Poetry, and I am your host, Teal Ansari, bringing you voices you may not have heard from places you may not have been. As a latecomer to this region, I thank the Indigenous peoples of the Portland area for their stewardship of this land. KBOO Portland is located on land that includes traditional village sites of the Multnomah, Wasco, Cowlitz, Kathlamet, Clackamas, bands of the Chinook, Tualatin, Kalapuya, Molalla, and many other tribes who made their homes along the Columbia and Willamette Rivers, creating communities and summer encampments to harvest and use the plentiful natural resources of the area. Portland is home to almost 70,000 people descended from these tribes and others, and KBOO thanks them. I do have a guest this month, but first I'm going to read a couple poems by Natalie Diaz. Natalie Diaz was born in the Fort Mojave Indian Village in Needles, California. She is Mojave and an enrolled member of the Gila River Indian Community. She earned a BA from Old Dominion University, where she received a full athletic scholarship, played professional basketball in Europe and Asia before returning to Old Dominion to earn an MFA. She's the author of the poetry collection When My Brother Was an Aztec. Her honors and awards include the Nimrod Hardman Pablo Neruda Prize for Poetry, the Louis Untermeyer Scholarship in Poetry from Breadloaf, the Narrative Poetry Prize, and a Lannan Literary Fellowship. And I'm going to read two poems by Natalie Diaz. The first is titled Dome Riddle. Tonight I am riddled by this thick skull, this white bowling ball zipped in the sad sack carrying case of my face, this overwound bone jack-in-the-box, this Orlando's Zero Washakan offering, cabeza locada, calayera azucarada, clavo jodido, cenote of Nemosyne, this sticky sweet guilt hive, Piedra Blanca del Rio Oscuro, this small-town medical mania dispensary, prescribed cranium pill, this electric blue tum-tum drum ticking like an acme bomb, hypnotized explosive device, pensive general, scalp-strapped warrior, soldier with a loaded god complex, This Hotchkiss obliterated headdress, Gatling lit labyrinth, this memory grenade, death epithet, death epitaph, mound of memento mori, this 22-part talisman wearing a skirt of breasts, giant ball of masa, this god patella in the long leg of my torso, zoo of canines and Blake's tigers, this red-skinned apple, lamp illuminated by teeth, gang of grins, spitwad of scheme, the jawbone of an ass, smiling sliver of smite, David's rock striking the Goliath of my body, this library of Babel, homegrown Golgotha, nostalgia menagerie, melon festival, this language mausoleum, Chuksanich Iratavan, Agi Kwanaya Sumach Nyamasov, this hidden glacier hungry for a taste of titanic flesh, this pleasure altar, French kiss sweatshop, abacus of one night stands, hippocampus, whorehouse, oubliette of regret, this church of tongue, chapel of vengeance, cathedral of thought, bone dome of despair, plaza del toro y pensamientos, this museum of tribal dentistry, commodity cranium cupboard, petrified dreamcatcher, this sun-ruined basketball that I haul rotted gray along the seams, perpetual mist shot, this insomnia podium, little bowl in a big fish, brain amphitheater, girl in the moon, this 3 a.m. war bell, duende vision prison, this single scoop vanilla head rush, thunderhead, fastball, lightning rod, this mad scientist in a white lab helmet, ghost of smoking mirror, this coyote beacon, calcium corral of pale perlino ponies, this desert seed I am root to, night-blooming cereus, gourd-gone rattle, this Halloween crown, hat-rack, worry contraption, Rimbaud's drunken boat, blazing chandelier, Casa de Relampago, this Colosseum Venatian, Borgia's other tiger, licking the empty shell of Lorca's white tortuga, this undressed godhead, forever hatching egg, this mug again and again at my lips. And all this because tonight I imagined you sleeping with her, the way we once slept, as intimate as a jaw, maxilla and mandible hot in the skin, in love, our heads almost touching. That was Dome Riddle by Natalie Diaz. Also by Natalie Diaz, No More Cake Here. When my brother died, I worried there wasn't enough time to deliver the 100 invitations I'd scribbled while on the phone with the mortuary. Because of the short notice, no need to RSVP. Unfortunately, the firemen couldn't come. I had hoped they'd give free rides on the truck. They did agree to drive by the house once with the lights on. It was a party after all. I put Mom and Dad in charge of balloons. Let them blow as many years of my brother's name, jails, $20 bills, midnight phone calls, fistfights, and ER visits as they could let go of. The scarlet balloons zigzagged along the ceiling like they'd been filled with helium. Mom blew up so many that she fell asleep. She slept for 10 years. She missed the whole party. My brothers and sisters were giddy, shredding his stained t-shirts and raggedy pants, throwing them up into the air like confetti. When the clowns came in, a few balloons slipped out the front door. They seemed to know where they were going and shrank to a fistful of red grins at the end of our cul-de-sac. The clowns played toy bugles until the air was scented with rotten raspberries. They pulled scarves from Mom's ear. She slept through it. I baked my brother's favorite cake, chocolate, white frosting. When I counted, there were 99 of us in the kitchen. We all stuck our fingers in the mixing bowl. A few stray dogs came to the window. I heard their stomachs and mouths growling over the mariachi band playing in the bathroom. There was no room in the hallway because of the magician. The mariachis complained about the bathtub acoustics. I told the dogs, no more cake here, and shut the window. The fire truck came by with the sirens on. The dogs ran away. I sliced the cake into 99 pieces. I wrapped all the electronic equipment in the house, taped pink bows and glittery ribbons to them. Remote controls, the Polaroid, stereo, shop vac, even the motor to Dad's work truck. everything my brother had taken apart and put back together doing his crystal meth tricks. He'd always been a magician of sorts. Two mutants came to the door. One looked almost human. They wanted to know if my brother had willed them the pots and pans and spoons staked in his basement bedroom. They said they missed my brother's cooking and did we have any cake. No more cake here, I told them. Well, what's in the piñata, they asked. I told them God was, and they ran into the desert barefoot. I gave Dad his slice and put Mom's in the freezer. I brought up the pots and pans and spoons. Really, my brother was a horrible cook. Banged them together like a New Year's Day celebration. My brother finally showed up, asking why he hadn't been invited and who baked the cake. He told me I shouldn't smile, that this whole party was shit because I'd imagined it all. The worst part, he said, was he was still alive. The worst part, he said, was he wasn't even dead. I think he's right, but maybe the worst part is that I'm still imagining the party. Maybe the worst part is that I can still taste the cake. And that was No More Cake Here by Natalie Diaz. My guest this month is Acela Lee Kemper. She holds a BFA in creative writing with a minor in emerging media and digital arts from Southern Oregon University. She holds many positions, including co-editor at Chopsticks Alley Pinoy, poetry editor at Variety Pack, and poetry reader at Borderlands, Texas Poetry Review, Timberline Review, and Maria Satsampagawitas. She also has published works in Southern Oregon University Student Press, Flawless Mag, The Border Issue, Silk Club, Quiet, Reclamation Mag, and the anthology No Tender Fences. Acela uses her passion for creative writing to open conversations on diversity and identity in literature. As an Asian American, she uses her platform to engage and uplift underrepresented Asian American artists. She currently resides in Oregon, USA with her family, and you can follow her on Twitter at Acela Lee K and Instagram at THESAKURAINK. The Sakura Inc., I think is how that's pronounced. Welcome,
Acela. Oh, it's the Sakura Inc. Hi. Hi. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, say that again, please.
Yeah, so my Instagram handle is The Sakura Inc. So it's like The Sakura Inc. with the K. And yeah.
Great. So I'd like to start by inviting you to read some poetry. And if you'd like to say a little bit about each poem and kind of the story behind it.
Absolutely. So this first poem I would like to read is an introduction to myself. It's called Hi, My Name Is. And it was originally from my little small chapbook that was part of my senior project back when I was a senior at SOU. And funny story that this poem actually had a completely different view, and I had a different idea, but this was stemmed from like an argument with a family member and the night before. It was a conversation about like, where am I gonna go in the future? What am I doing with my degree? And it got to a point where that my family member said, like, what are you gonna do with this degree? I don't see you doing anything with it. And after that conversation, mind you, this is all over the phone, I was so heated, or for lack of a better term, I was very upset, to the point where in my head, I said, I will show her, I will show her that I can do something with this. So, and like I said earlier, this poem had a completely different view of what was approaching. It was more gonna be more nice and encouraging. I threw all of that out of the window and used all that anger energy into this piece. And after I was finished, I read it to the class the day after, and everybody was very surprised. And it was also surprising to me because it was one of the poems, it was the first time I got to hear my own voice. And I feel like a lot of people resonate that too, because it also, I submit this to Flawless Magazine for their Borders issue back in 2017. And I'm really still proud of it to this day. Of course, with my chapbook too, which I'm gonna probably read another one a little later, but this one holds a special place in my heart. And it's kind of an introduction to myself. So this is, hi, my name is. Hi, my name is Asila, Estella, Azalea. Sally? No. Let me start over. Hi, my name is Wade. What does it mean? It must be Chinese. It has to be Chinese because you are obviously boring. It doesn't mean anything special, but I am sure you're expecting some kind of philosophical crap you read somewhere in an outdated baby name blog. You're expecting me to pull out a scroll with ancient Chinese calligraphy, spelling my name as a story about my name is forgettable. It's the same canvas when you walk out of the door, through a crowd. All you see is Chinese, 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 maybe Filipino? Let me start over. Hi, my name is Mom. I was raised by a Korean mother of Japanese culture. My father was barely there to watch me playing tennis, taking ballet classes, or appreciating my heritage better. He was too busy laughing the idea that my name is Iman. That is my Chinese name. I think it has to do with water, which is funny because I am a Pisces, but I can't swim through my parents' language like waves. I give in to the salt water and end up drowning at the bottom of the Yellow Sea, drifting farther and farther away from dry land where Iman is just another Chinese word on a scroll. Mom couldn't find a name for me. She knew when she bore a boy, she would name him something simple as Alec. She could have gifted me Iman or a Korean name to represent my heritage like an eagle badge until she met her doctor. The doctor's name is not Asian, but her name was beautiful. When she said it out loud, it was like bells were ringing, welcoming me to this world. I think back then, Mom knew that the doctor's name would also be mine. It has no meaning like cherry blossom, white angel, or the one who let everything change when the Fire Nation attacked. But the name itself is already meaningful. It doesn't need Chinese characters to be pretty. It doesn't have to wrap itself with a kimono and greet me warmly within. No. My name means me. Let me start over. So this next piece I would like to read is called Ancestors. And this poem was actually come from a writing challenge I started a year after I graduated from college. And this was stemmed from my fear that I'm not continuously writing enough because, you know, when you writers, you always tell you gotta write every day, it doesn't matter, you gotta keep practicing your craft. There's always this nervousness that if I'm not writing something, I'm not doing my work. And kind of comes into this imposter syndrome that maybe I'm not a writer because I'm not writing every day or I'm not creating these beautiful words every day. And this writing challenge kind of stems from just kind of a combination of like, yes, you can write about what you wanted to write, but trying to aim for like a month. So every month of February, which is my birth month, I write every day. Doesn't matter what it is, no matter what it's about, just write about it. It used to be like no theme, like just write whatever. But I realized, like I think back in 2019, it got stressful. That idea got extremely stressful. So then I started incorporating a theme, and this poem specifically came from those themes where last year I did the alphabet every day. And this poem is actually one of my favorites, and it's called Ancestors. When I speak to my ancestors, they only hear gibberish. My mom didn't grow up looking for God, but she always felt her relatives' bloodline watched over all of us. Since then, I believe in this more than a guy in a white robe. I sometimes try to talk to them every night. I hold my hands together, whisper through my fingers towards the ceiling of my thoughts and tears if the life I'm leading is the right one, at least guiding me to where I'm closer to happiness. I keep promising myself that I'm going to master Japanese and Korean, as if I didn't put BTS's discography on loop and maybe with a song or two, they might understand. My dad is up there with my ancestors. But I'm sure even he wouldn't know what to say to them. All they can hear is scattered words. I can only hear their silence. This next poem is actually another from my writing challenge, but this was took in May, and this was kind of also going off of the theme. And this poem is called Monochrome. So this poem came from last year when I attempted to use my writing challenge in May, and I tried to use it simultaneously. Then I realized it was just got very stressful. But this poem in particular, or at least kind of like a play on lyrics to the song, really, like, I originally had this poem, but I remixed it, meaning like I edited to make it seem more fitting to what the idea I was going for. And I was playing with colors and how I view colors, and as well as like kind of going off in the tune of one of my favorite artists, which is Nao, N-A-O, who is a British singer, to her song Inhale Exhale, which is a gorgeous song. And yeah, and I put this out back in May of last year, and it's called Monochrome. Dreading to get up, let me stay and dream in technicolor. Push back any flaw, hide until it's safe to love me again. Under these pink skies, would you notice me if I fade to gray? Shade into a blur, black and white can last for oh so long. See, even if I smile, paint it in bright blue, shadows will slip through. I try to embrace my yellow face, but I run back to white. Stuck in a blank page, but when I speak in pastel, galaxy, it's a glimpse of me. So this next poem I would like to read is actually from one of the poems I read for, this is actually also another poem that I wrote for last year's theme for my writing challenge, and it's called Yellow. And this is kind of a salute to myself as an Asian person, and also loving my skin, and also the color yellow, which is kind of funny because BTS just came out with Butter, and their album cover, and their single cover, I mean, is yellow for Butter, which is kind of cool. And fun fact, I was inspired by this after I was reading an article by I think it was an interview with John Chu, who is the director of Crazy Rich Asian, and they were asking why they picked the song Yellow by Coldplay to play at the end of the film. And it was, the way he described it was very empowering, and I think that's what influenced this poem today. So this poem is called Yellow. My skin is made of petals plucked from sunflowers, and glitter dawned from the sun's light, a reflection of warm summers in Tokyo and mom's future after she had me in Colorado. I used to hate the color yellow. It painted a shadow of dusted textbooks and pictures of people who look like me with a buck tooth and long braided black hair, caught in the middle between adapting the American dream my father once tried to build with a Broncos jersey and woke by pretending to be white or speaking their truth. As I got older, I smoothed my oily cheeks with the tips of my fingers, slowly healing from pimple scratches. A small wink from the sun's light flashed back at me. I smile at my reflection. Yellow looks good on me. So this next piece I would like to read is actually from my chapbook. So quickly describing this chapbook, it's called Cherry Blossom Festival. And during my senior year at SOU, we were tasked to create our own chapbook, and limited to like at least however long, it was like more than 20 pages, and I have like 50 copies or more. And this was the first time I've gotten so much joy from this. And it's, I feel like this collection of poems, it's basically kind of my view of my experiences in college as an Asian American woman. And I'm so proud of it even to this day. I always call it my baby. And recently I finally put it up on my Etsy store, which you can find at etsystore.com, Pink Crane Press. I will link into till later today. But yeah, this is one of the poems I'm going to read is called Paper Doll for Amber. And this poem was based on a tweet by a singer I used to follow, where she responded to a person in her personal life about her gender identity, because she always dresses up like in pants and tomboy, and they always give her the question of, when are you gonna dress up like a girl? So this poem is inspired by the tweet. So this is Paper Doll for Amber. A guy messaged me on Twitter, "So when are you gonna be a girl?" I'll be honest, I miss dresses. They cushion my waist and hips, protecting my chest from physical touch. Their silky, soft fabric covers my curves, matching my emotions from purple to blue. Dresses make me feel secure. But pants. He waits for me to wear a tight Chinese dress and expects me to lift its hem so he can get a proper boner. Or maybe it is the way my hair fall above my ear. He tried to Photoshop me in a black wig, forced me to sing Chinese ballads to him. Okay, but pants. Something about sliding each leg into their sleeves, I feel a sense of new power. Breaking every rule society set up when I came out of my mother's womb. Capris, slacks, khakis, bell bottoms, shorts, jeans. Wearing pants is like wearing dresses. They cushioned my bottom, providing it space for my keys and a middle finger, just in case. I could wear this tight dress he laid out for me, but if I slip this dress on and use my torn, bedazzled jeans as stockings, walk out of this room, click my heels as they sing Hold Up on the concrete, you will know the difference. So this next poem was actually from SOU Student Press's first issue, Main Squeeze. I had the privilege to be one of their art editors for this issue. And they actually included the poem for the very last, and I was very privileged to it, and I was very surprised. So this poem was actually based on two white writers who infamously used an Asian name to get like publications and get publishing their work easily. It's a lot of stories. And even one of them, actually Sherman Alexie, even published it and tried to like try to excuse it, which is, it's a whole other story in itself. So this is a letter to those two writers who, because I have a very unique name and a lot of people mispronounce it, this is a letter to them. Letter to Michael Derek Hudson and Kent Johnson. I found your name on a pencil, wrapped neatly like a birthday gift. Target and Toys R Us hand them to you and leave me with, maybe next time, kid. Asian stores don't sell those. They're too busy stocking vegetables, clutching onto our childhood memories and mini Sailor Moon figurines, securing cheap prices and prizes for anyone who needs a new glass bowl or chopsticks. Why did you steal my name? You didn't have to worry if someone mispronounced Michael. When a stranger walks up to you, grips your hand into a handshake, will that person ask you, how do you pronounce your name? Would you ever hear yourself saying your name 3 or 50 times until they get it right? Well, will that person give up and call you by the first two syllables of your name or Mike? Did you ever have to plaster it with calligraphy and dim sum? Chow mein, Tibet, Cantonese, Hiroshima survivor, sushi, Hong Kong origami, konnichiwa exotic. My name used to mean something. My mother made sure there was soy sauce on the dinner table, providing a salty taste of my culture I know nothing of. My heritage was the only thing to call. My name was the only thing to call my heritage. But why did you steal my name? So that's one of the older poems. I think it's the first time since I read it in a long time. So this next poem I would like to read is actually from Silk Club Quiet Issue, which is for their fourth issue. And one of the poems, they actually published three poems, which I was surprised. Fun fact, I accidentally submitted three poems to them under like a whole submission called Chung. And they put this small section with Chung, which is my old last name. And I thought that was a really cool thing. And I was surprised and got worried, because I thought that was a mistake, because it was a whole submission, and I was so worried. And they're like, no, you're fine, we're gonna put this section. I'm like, okay. And it looked great, and it's, I think it's in stores now or it's out of stock, but it should be on the Silk Club website. I'll send the link to make sure that it's there. But one of the poems I'm going to read is called Mother Tongue. I trace my voice back to post-it notes, run my fingers through piles of scratch paper stocked up on the desk mom used after dad passed away. Digging through scratch papers, I recite scattered words, salvaged through BTS songs and clips from Stranger Things to get one word or two from the language I was born with. I sound out each consonant the way mom forms hers before I reach to vowels her accent smooths between her teeth through all of this. Her wishes echo in my mind. You have to know English. You have to know English. You have to know English. You have to. As much as I want to talk the way my mom does, how fluent my vocabulary may be, I still can't find the right word for others to understand what I'm trying to say. And this next piece is also from Silk Club Quiet Issue number 4. It's called After Vincent Chan. And this was actually after reading articles about Vincent Chan. For those who don't know, Vincent Chan was a Chinese man whose life got cut short because of two white men accused him blamed him for kind of quote unquote taking his job after the Japanese company Honda pretty much like kind of, in a way, they, in their view, they think they're taking their jobs, and they blamed Vincent Chan for the blame, and unfortunately result in his death. And that also helped, one of the moments helped jumpstart the Asian American activism, and of course in the light of Asian hate crimes. And I would like to read this poem after Vincent Chan. I will drink water. I will write one paragraph a day, even if I don't have anything to say. I will shelter what my ancestors left behind when my mom's family came to this country. I will cry and laugh at moments where I feel warmth. I will speak the language I know, especially when an old white lady questions how I talk to her. I will hold Katrina's hand, let her know I'm still here. I will get home safe. I will stand with my feet on the asphalt, even when I'm covered in my blood. I will raise my voice loud enough so people will know I'm still here for my family, for my community, for my dreams, for myself. I will smile, reflect on how far I have come. I will chase after my dream. It seems miles and miles away, but I will tell myself that I will get there one day. I will cry. I will say their names. Trayvon, Sandra, Phil, Eric, Leon, Zoe, so no one will forget them. I will scream. Let every ounce of annoyance and anger out. I will create space for me and others around me. I will not let my worries swallow my body, sinking into the deep I call my head. I will tell my mom I love her. I will continue to breathe. I will walk on this concrete as my own. I will live. I will live. I will live. I will live. I will. So this next piece I would like to read is from SOU Student Press's Essential Oil. So this was a year after they released Main Squeeze. I had the privilege to send in my poems to this publication, and actually some of my friends were poetry editors in here, and I was so lucky to be in the same issue with them. So one of the poems I will read is called The Great Wall, and it's actually funny because I'm a fan of pop culture. I love like pop music and whatnots, and especially when it comes to like pop artists who are by like Asian Americans or Asian artists, specifically K-pop, and seeing the way the music industry or just the entertainment industry in general just really treated their Asian American and their Asian entertainers and creators. So this was kind of my take on it, and it's called The Great Wall. They say I can't make it into show business unless I flex my arms the way Bruce Lee did until his head swelled up before he had the chance to see his star on America. They say I can't make it into show business if I don't sign my name on the movie credit, Asian Girl Number 5. So I have to accept that white people are Asian protagonists. If Japanese people don't care, I shouldn't whine about a movie meant for entertainment. Art should be free, right? They say I can't make it into show business unless I'm in a K-pop group, unless I'm that third guy on the left in BTS. I can travel to America and accept my top social media award, but I can't go on stage and sing a couple of Korean songs because Asians have no talent, except martial arts. They say I can't make it into show business because editors will tell me that no one will relate to my writing unless I add more chopsticks, deep-fried cats, and a racist grandma. When I said no, they question where I am really from. They say I can't make it into show business unless I'm willing to sell my identity to Scarlett Johansson. I entered the dragon's mouth and met with Bruce Lee, who was swimming in its belly. Welcome to show business. All right, cool. So this next piece I'll be reading, and it's from the same issue, and it's called Thanksgiving. And this is based on an old memory I have back when I was living in Colorado. And this was from my first dad and my experience, just like kind of this weird way, because my relatives from my biological side of my father came to like eat at a big dinner table, and they were speaking and they were talking, having a good time, while my brother and I kind of sat somewhere in the small corner and we're pretty quiet. So this is a poem to my biological father in a sense, and it's called Thanksgiving. I stopped expecting you to come home. I didn't bother dressing our house with paper rings from corner to corner. I left the Buddha unmoved. No red thin sticks were torched in front of him. The mahogany cabinet hasn't been dusted since you came for Christmas 5 years ago. Mom thought about staying in a hotel near our apartment because she didn't want to be in the same room with a father who never told his family that his son has autism. The last time you were here, your brothers and sisters crashed our home and you ate smoked turkey with them, speaking Mandarin all night while Mom, my brother, and I sat around at a half table eating roasted marshmallows. Mom suggested we watch Mickey's Once Upon a Christmas together, but you were already in the first half of the money. I had nightmares for a couple nights from that first scene when the pharaoh was covered in bugs. Watching Mom shuffle her feet, avoided my eyes, and wondered if we would be okay. I thought those times were what a normal family would do. Maybe it was a Chinese thing, but even then, I still loved you.
This is Wider Window Poetry, and my guest this month is Asayla Lee Kemper. Thank you so much for joining us. So you work as a poetry reader for several journals. Tell us a little bit about that work. What do you do?
Yeah, so as a poetry reader, basically we're kind of based what one of my editors, former editors at Borderlines would basically describe it as, we're kind of like the front line when it comes to poetry submissions. We're the first ones to read those poetry submissions. So whatever submission we have, the issue brings in, we're the first ones to kind of read it through it and just kind of give feedback saying, like, this poem is, I think, fits for this issue, or that we gotta fight for, I wanna fight for this poem because it fits the guidelines. And only that, it just shows like different colors and uniqueness, and it just really showcased like something new to the issue, right? So it's different for some people, like for some issues, like for Marías de Santa Guidas, we have like a Slack channel where we pretty much everyone, including the pretty much everyone is open to kind of like read it and just kind of give their feedback, kind of in a way communicative. Borderlands is that we bring, the editors will send in the poem submissions and kind of like break it into like different sections, like break it into parts and just give it to like different readers, and we just read it, email our feedback to them. Mind you, this is all a remote, so we weren't able to kind of sit in a room together, which is unfortunate. And we just kind of gave in our feedbacks, like, hey, this is like, think this poem didn't work, or I don't think this poem fits to the this issue. And we're also the front lines where if we find any problematic poems, like saying like if there's a certain wording or that there's a specific piece by this person who says some really inappropriate things or problematic, or just anything that goes against what any of our publications or any literary magazines that going against what our morals are, kind of like being inclusive, whatnot, we just let the editors know, like, hey, we're axing this poem out because this is not only this is like offensive, but it also just could potentially hurt a lot of communities. So we're basically in the front lines before the editors, like poetry editors or fiction editors, would bring in those kind of help, dwindle it out together so it's not overwhelming. It's really fun.
So you get to read a lot of great poetry and maybe not so great poetry. And you said you do it mostly remotely. Was that true before the pandemic as well?
In a way, one was because it was pretty much all of the ones that I'm a poetry reader for are all online, and this is all volunteer based. And this is funny because like, even before the pandemic, I wasn't even sure that they existed. I didn't know that being a poetry reader existed. And I was part of the 6-month program called Representation Matters. So I was in a program called Representation Matters, where it's a program where I get to meet with remotely with other folks like in the industry, in the publishing industry. Like at least we get 2 mentors, and both of them encouraged me to like volunteer however I can, whether it be like at a small press locally or online. So it's encouraged. And of course, when the pandemic hit, it came out of left field. But even before then, only one was Marías de Santa Guidas, which I cannot stress enough how, even though I'm not Pinoy, I'm half Korean and half Chinese, but I'm so privileged to not to be in a literary space with the team at Marías de Santa Guidas. Like, we're not only communicative, but they also find a way to support each other and uplift each other in a ways like whether we have different poetry works out and published, or that we have like any literary positions that we're going for, they lift each other up. They will tell like, hey, look at this person of our team did something amazing. Go check out their book. They just published a book out, or congratulations to this, our reader, who is our editor, who's an editor for a literary magazine, which is fantastic. So I gotta give credit to Marías de Santa Guidas because they were the first literary magazine that I was a poetry reader for, and made me feel so excited about the literary community, and also kind of continuing this notion of why I'm doing what I'm doing right now.
So one of the questions I had for you is, how does a person kind of get plugged into the professional poetry world? And it sounds like just volunteering to be a poetry reader is one way of doing that. So how do you go about that? Do you just email a bunch of online journals and say, hey, I'm willing to volunteer as a poetry reader? Do you have any openings?
Yeah, so I think someone getting to door, and someone actually asked me this last year, is that really know how to network and look kind of go through like, what's your favorite literary magazines, your literary presses, what is your favorites, kind of look at their website to see if they're looking for interns. Interns is also a great way to get involved, not so volunteering, and it can just not just be like a poetry reader. There's also like a social media intern where you can help with like their social media, and just like finding ways to dip your toes into it. And it's just really great to get into involved with the community. Also kind of reaching out and getting to know people within a community is a great way to do it. So I would say, yeah, definitely reach out. And also sometimes, like, definitely don't hesitate to check out their website either, because sometimes they'll, some literary magazines would post like on social media or on their website, they say like, hey, we're looking for people, and they should have at least like a job app description or just like anything, like volunteer, come help us out. And it does not limit to like literary magazines, that's also like small press and even like traditional housing, but definitely aim for, I highly recommend people to aim for like literary magazines, like especially like online, independent and local, because it really helps to really interact with the community from there. And it's just like, yeah, you can go for like the big traditional housing like Penguin House and whatnots, but it's best to get involved with community to really know like who you're speaking to, and sometimes that there's, if there's any problems comes up, that's where you come together. So yeah, definitely like email them, and don't be afraid to look at the websites, and if you want to like interact around, definitely go for that too.
So I think that's really interesting, the focus on local magazines, because Portland, I mean, we have a really strong literary community and a lot of local organizations and local journals and small presses. And that's, I think, an invaluable resource, especially with poetry, where the opportunities in major publishing are really small. And, you know, without all of these small presses, I don't know how poetry would ever survive.
Yeah.
And you're also an editor or co-editor on a couple of magazines. What, tell us a little bit about that. How did you come to be in those positions, and what's the work like?
Yeah, so I'll start with, so I do have two. So I'm going to start with co-editor at Chopsticks Alley Pinoy, which is funny because my editor-in-chief, Kiana Arriga Labra, who is the editor-in-chief at Maria Sestampiquitas, she posted like saying, hey, my old position at co-editor is open. If anyone want to, like, if anybody interested, let me know. But in my head, I was doing it for my other friend who's actually Filipina. And I was reaching out in her place and kind of surprised her, saying, hey, I have this position for you. You should like go for it. And I reached out to Kiana. I don't think she knows this. When I reached out to Kiana, she was like, oh, so you're interested in it. I'm like, oh, no. I was going to say no. And then she already like sending me like information about it and contact information. I was already reaching out to like the, which is the director of Chopsticks Alley. Her name is Charming Kron, who is amazing. She's wonderful. And
so you're saying you got this opportunity by accident?
Yeah, an accident. Yeah, I was like, because all in my head when I reached out, to like, oh my God, my friend would be perfect for this. So I was like, I was doing it in her honor without her acknowledgement. And then Kiana was like, oh, so you wanted to do it? I was like, before I even could say no, she already is sending me all the information. So I was like, I guess we're here. So, and then I already set up an interview with Trami then, and all that was like flash before my eyes. I'm like, what just happened? So I was just like, so when I, and I did the interview with Trami, and she was just like, oh, so you're like, how, like, are you, what generation of Filipina are you? I'm like, I'm actually not Filipino. I'm not Pinoy at all. And we're both kind of concerned, saying like, then what do you want to do in this position? I'm like, so I'm comfortable with it, as long as you're comfortable with it. Is that, as much as I want to like bring up like my experiences and uplift my Asian American heritage, I want to like make sure to use my platform to bring up Pinoy and Pinoy American writers and creators and use that there. So I'm like, you know what, like, I'm already mindset for that. I don't mind. I have other ways to do it. And Chopsticks Alley, which is a great web, it's an amazing organization. It's a website that really spotlights Southeast Asian voices and creators, and just like expanding their art, just like highlighting their art, which is phenomenal. And we've been doing that. And just basically right now, it's just like kind of, we have a lot of great contributors, and to like kind of have this organized communicating with like, hey, so we have this article that you want to write about, and just like having this process of editing. So basically like me and another co-editor, we basically read through like contributors, each contributor's article, because it's mainly just like articles and like our stories. about like highlighting different what's happening in the community in the more in the retrospective of art and just like any forms of art, and just kind of like what they're doing and highlighting what it is. And so we basically kind of like read through, give some notes of like what can you improve on, if there's any parts that feels like it needs to be expanded upon, and just, and then after that we take it to like copy editor. We have two interns right now there, two editors, and they will look through it for any like grammatical errors or there's something that's still not clear, and then we'll try to communicate it from there. And after that's all done, we send it out to how to be ready for publishing on social media. So it's very collaborative and communicative, even though we're not in like in the same room, but we do our best to kind of like email each other or go like Google Doc, kind of like put notes, say like, hey, this section does not make sense. It is a stray away from what I usually do, which is like creative writing, poetry, and whatnot. But this is what I love doing, that because it's fun to like really get to know like their writing style and just like what each person have, like what they were able to bring into the table. Like I had one contributor bring in like a personal essay about her relationship with food, which is phenomenal. It's so gorgeous. And I keep forgetting that our website is basically focusing on like articles writing and not most so creative writing. So that was like, whoops. But still, that was like an amazing piece. And we had another one who did an interview recently with an incredible writer, and it's just, who does like fantasy and like in like by a queer person. It was just awesome. So it's really fun. It's communicative, it's collaborative, and like Maria Sabagidas, we lift each other up and just make sure that we're all supportive and open to questions. And for my other editing job, it was a little funny story. So maybe not as funny as the co-editor one, but as a poetry editor, I applied for like, I think it was a year or two ago for Variety Pack. And after I applied, I haven't heard anything back. So I'm just like, all right, it happens. Because usually sometimes when you do apply for like a poetry editor or an editor, if you don't hear back for like 2 weeks or so, that means you most likely didn't get it. So it's just like, okay, I didn't get it. And then a year later, I got an email saying, hey, we are so sorry, we completely forgot your email, but you look like you're fit for this position, so we wanted to bring you on the team. And I'm like, okay, this is great. So right now we just got our three incredible poetry readers, and they're reading through submissions right now. And so basically the same thing that I would do, but like I'm not the poetry reader, but after like they'll tell me like, hey, this poem's great, this can consider for a publication, then I would read it and I'll look at it, and then I'll send it to my editor-in-chief and say, hey, I got these poems, they should be ready to go. And yeah, right now we're like, I think we just recently closed our submission call, and then now we're just reading through the submissions, which we have like a lot. We have like a little over 60 submissions, which is a lot, which is great. So, and there's some really good poetry titles coming out from Variety Pack. So, I mean, the team is great. I think they're awesome. Shout outs to Jared Benjamin, aka JB. They're great. And a little bit about Variety Pack, they are a online literary magazine based in New York, but it's like from everyone around the world, and we're all collaborative, and it's fantastic.
So that's kind of a strength, I think, of online journals, is that you really can take submissions from anywhere. I mean, the barriers to sending physical submissions internationally, it costs more, it takes a lot longer, but with email, it's right there. It doesn't matter if it's next door or around the world. So that's created some opportunities, I think. I wanted to ask you, and you addressed this a little bit in some of your poems. At this time, especially in the last year, there's mm-hmm. been a lot more overt racism against Asians or people perceived as Asians in this country. At the same time, I think we're seeing increasing conversation about it, increasing awareness, and increasing resistance in the Asian American community, which traditionally I think we've been pretty quiet about what we've had to put up with. And as an Asian American poet and editor and reader, you've mentioned several times, you know, you see your mission as being to help uplift Asian voices. And certainly you have the opportunities to do that, but what is it like writing during this time? How do you see that kind of reflecting in your personal writing?
Yeah, I think it's just like even before the recent Asian hate crimes, I think there were moments where when it comes to my writing, it just, I can't think of, there were times where I do feel like maybe I'm taking up space. Maybe I'm over speaking about being proud of being Asian American. Because even I had conversations with my family. It's just like, why are you talking so much about Asian American? We get it. You're proud of it. But like, like kind of settled out a little bit. But I think there's also times it's just like even my writing, I'm just seeing like, should I talk about it? Should I not? Or just like, but for a while, I realized I started learning about like, this is my experience. This is what I went through, and I have to keep myself in check. And luckily I have a good support system to keep myself in check, that my experiences are still valid, my feelings are still valid, and it comes to my writing. And when it, but it was kind of, it spoke more volumes with the recent Asian hate crimes. I actually, back in March, I was with the recent attack with an Atlanta shooting, I was so emotionally checked out because that the, all the news comes out. Because when that was happening, at the same time, I think it was a publishing company, not publishing company, but like it was a company that was known to publish like very cabbage patch kids artistic satirical look on it. There you go, stereotypical look on like Grammy winners, because that's when like, the Grammys were come out recently. And there was one art that they used of BTS, which is a Korean boy group, where for a content warning there's exhibit of violence. They depicted them being beaten, brutally bruised in a whack-a-mole game by using a gramophone Grammy award and just like whacking them. That happened around the same time the news broke out of the Atlanta shooting came in. And when I saw that, it felt like the universe was telling me that oh, that's sad, but you're also being funny. It's kind of like our Asian Americans like kind of saying like, oh, that's sad, but also like we don't care about your experiences. And that kind of in a way triggered a lot of my suppressed feelings and childhood for like being an Asian American. And I was so emotionally checked out, like I couldn't even talk to any of my coworkers at my day job because of the day. I didn't even bother to say hi the next day. And that for a while, I was afraid to write about anything. Like, I want to say something, I want to write about it, but I was so emotionally drained by it that it was hard. It was really hard to speak up about it. And it's better now because it did inspire me to be kind of know that just whatever my experience I have is valid, just to take time, but also not to keep forcing myself to speak up for so much, because especially if I'm just like drained so much. And it really helped, because then I did have poems slowly coming out, and I'm slowly like coming back to it and just being, and it reminded me to like be supportive of myself and also the people around me in the communities. And it's very important because around this time there's this overwhelming solidarity for Asian Americans, which I've never seen since I was little. Which if I look back at my high school, like I have weird experiences. Like I even got told that Manzanar, which is a Japanese internment camp, was not as bad as the concentration camps in Germany. Like it wasn't that, I was told that Manzanar wasn't that bad as like Jewish camps. Because for a long time, it's just like, yeah, I'm Asian and my racist subliminal microaggression was bad, but it wasn't as bad as this community, what happened to it. So basically for all my life, it's just like playing the oppressed Olympics, which I was so done. And seeing how there's been overwhelming solidarity for Asian Americans, not just outside of the community, but also within, it just got me to realize like, it's emotional, but also kind of reminds me that I gotta continue. And this is supporting me in a way that it's just like, I'm not afraid to speak up as much as I used to before. So I learned to speak up more and use my writing to utilize that and not be afraid to share my viewpoints of it. So yeah, so it was emotionally draining at first, but at the same time, it was just like, a very good experience in knowing that I'm not alone.
This is Wider Window Poetry.
You're listening to KBOO Portland 90.7 FM.
Until you give me what I deserve. But first things first, nigga, fuck you, pay.